Good morning and welcome to Studies Through the Bible with Pastor Zach Ebar. We are continuing this morning with our study in the wisdom literature of the Old Testament. We will have today and then one more day that we're going to talk about the Song of Solomon. That'll be next week. It's going to be a very interesting study. There's a lot more to that book than what meets the eyes for many people, and a lot of people have an improper understanding of what goes on in that book. But today we are going to be looking at Proverbs and Ecclesiastes, okay? And we're going to try to kind of put these two books together as we're doing the overview. Like, I'm going to separate them out for you to give you the overall idea and theme of each book. But really, when we're looking at Proverbs and Ecclesiastes, we need to put both of these two books together. Not because they were written together or anything of that nature, but because they help to supplement one another. It's kind of like both sides of a quarter. You know, you got the head on one side, tails on the other. You can't have Proverbs without Ecclesiastes and Ecclesiastes without Proverbs. So let's kind of put to bed some things in regards to these two books. First of all, the book of Proverbs literally means the parables of Solomon, okay? We derived that, our English title for that book from the Latin translation of the Bible, which was Liber Proverborium, or Book of Proverbs. But the original Hebrew title for this book is Mishlei Shelomon, or Parables of Solomon, okay? And obviously, this makes a lot of sense. Solomon was the main writer of many of these Proverbs. There's a couple here and there that are attributed to two other guys. Chapters 30 and 31, you have Agur, the son of Jake. Okay, that's chapter 30, and King Lemuel in chapter 31. But the majority of the Proverbs, 1 through 9, 10 through 22, 25 through 29, are all attributed to Solomon. So the majority of these are his, and in fact, his own Proverbs. We know from the book of 1 Kings that Solomon wrote probably 3,000 Proverbs, 800 of which are actually recorded in the book of Proverbs. So they didn't get all of them. I guess not all of them were worth writing down, or maybe he combined them or something of that nature. But we have this discussion about the actual authorship of the book of Proverbs and of Ecclesiastes. Traditionally, Solomon is attributed both of these. I would say that there is no reason to doubt Solomonic authorship. However, there are a couple of other thoughts and ideas that these were put together and done after the exile, which would have been many hundreds of years after Solomon, and more around the time of the return of Ezra to Jerusalem. I would tell you right now, based off of the context of what goes on in Ecclesiastes and the context of what's going on in Proverbs, and the fact that Proverbs attributes the authorship of Solomon to many of those sections in the book of Proverbs, that it is, in fact, more than acceptable that we give Solomon the authorship, I guess, credit for both of these books. Many people will say that these Proverbs were gathered up and collected by Hezekiah 230 years after Solomon and put together and things of that nature. But I will tell you that it is probably a very safe bet that Solomon authored both of these books. And we're going to talk about that a little bit more in depth when we begin to do book-by-book study together on here of what's going on in these books. But so what we have here is we have this idea of a proverb, right? Now, there is not, I want to make sure to heavily emphasize this, there is not one single culture in the entire world that does not have some sort of a book of Proverbs, okay? And the idea of a proverb is that it is a skill for living, okay? You're going to see many different things. There's going to be poetry, parables, pithy questions, short stories, wise maxims, this kind of thing, all throughout the book of Proverbs. And we need to make sure that we read those correctly and all together at one time. There's many people that, oh, if you read, just read one proverb a day. Well, that's not necessarily true. Okay, we got to keep all of these groupings in the right context. And then we also have to pay very close attention to what we're looking at. If we're looking at poetry, very, very few times is poetry going to be literal to what is written there, and is much more, rather, a metaphorical representation of something. Whereas a parable, we know without a shadow of a doubt that the parable itself is literal, but it has a metaphoric spiritual meaning, okay? So, you know, the poetry part, you're not going to, probably not going to start out reading literal at all, whereas with a parable, you're going to read it literally, but interpret what the spiritual context is. And most of these parables, they're going to give you the answers, just like Jesus. He would teach a parable, he would explain it, okay? And so what we have here is basically a book of life skills, okay? And like I said, all cultures had this. The difference between the Hebrew book of Proverbs and the Proverbs of, say, Egypt or China, whatever country you want to grab, is that the Proverbs of the Hebrews, Solomon's book of Proverbs, derives itself from God and God's laws, okay? When you look at Proverbs from other countries, other regions, they're more like common sense type things, okay? They don't necessarily deal with morality. They don't necessarily care all that much about right from wrong, but rather just some basic common sense type stuff. If you look at like the writings of Confucius, you look at that and if you read through it, and you can go read through it if you'd like, it'll kind of help to enlighten you on what I mean by this difference of God-centered wisdom as opposed to man-made wisdom. He basically says things like, don't cheat on your wife. Well, duh. You know, if you cheat on your wife, bad things might happen, okay? But it's not because of a moral high ground. It's because, look, you don't want that kind of drama in your life. Whereas with Proverbs and what's going on Solomon, it's all about building up your family spiritually, about maintaining that relationship with God and how that maintaining of the relationship will benefit your life overall. It's not just don't do it so that your life is not, you know, bad. It's don't do it because of this, because of what God has said, because of what God has deemed to be true. And so as we're looking at the book of Proverbs, it has a very positive tone, okay? It's very encouraging. It's very emphatic. It's very instructional. The idea is to really help you to gain these skills for life, okay? And so when we're looking at it, we're going to kind of break it up into six sections, okay? Overall, the idea of the book of Proverbs is that it is a guide for young men, okay? But the topics that we cover in the book of Proverbs broaden beyond that. Like something that we don't understand as men today is that men need to understand what their responsibility is, what their wife's responsibility is, and what their kids' responsibility is, because as the leader, they are supposed to help dictate all of those responsibilities, okay? So for all the men that listen to this, this is a book written to men, even though it's going to cover topics that are applicable to other people, because you as the man are to guide your home, okay? And so when we're looking at these segments, this is not going to probably be broken up in a way that you have heard before. But first of all, we're going to have the purpose of Proverbs, okay? That's chapters 1:1-7. Solomon is giving you, this is why this is important. Okay, this is why we're going to have this discussion. Then there's a Proverbs to the youth, more specifically young men. However, young women will probably benefit from what young men are supposed to know as well, wouldn't they? So It's Proverbs to the youth. That is chapters 1 through 9. So obviously there's a lot that they need to be aware about, a lot they need to be disciplined on, despite popular cultural belief. Then you have the actual Proverbs of Solomon himself, okay? And these are many different wise sayings, many different examples of wisdom as far as like raising your kids, how mother and father are to be equally involved in raising and nurturing children, why that's important, the duties of a wife, duties of a husband, the how to discipline your children. There's a lot of things that are discussed in this section, okay? Then we have the words of Agur, which is chapter 30, and the words of King Lemuel, which is chapter 31, and they have a couple of very interesting and important ideas that they bring to the table as well. But what's amazing about Proverbs is that it is one of the few books in the Bible that clearly tells you what the point is, okay? And the point is to teach moral discernment and discretion. Okay, it's to give these life skills, how you're supposed to live and why. We tend to think of wisdom as being intelligence, right? If you know a lot of things, oh, he's so wise. He, you know, you can be talking about this subject and he can tell you all about it. Guys, wisdom is not knowledge. Wisdom is applied knowledge. Okay, when you have wisdom. And you're talking about wisdom, it's not just some quick little nit fun fact, okay? It's not like if you ask me, how many eggs does this specific breed of chicken raise? For those of you who don't know, I raise lots of chickens, okay? And I said, oh, well, it's 250 a year for that breed. Okay, that's not wisdom. That's just knowledge, okay? Wisdom is something to do with life. It's something to do with a deeper aspect. It's more like, when somebody is insulting you and being rude, what should you do? Probably keep your mouth shut until you can ascertain what is going on and come up with a good response. Okay, that's wisdom. And not only is that wisdom, but with wisdom, we also have to have application. Okay, you can have all the wisdom in the world, but if you don't apply it to your life, it is useless. Okay. So the point of Proverbs is not only to give you what you need to do, but how you need to go about doing it. It's to equip you with skills necessary for life, okay? And it deals a lot with just practical righteousness before God, practical living, common sense things. It's a very, very simple book. It has a lot of wisdom in it, and it's a very important book, but it's beautifully simplistic in its approach to teaching you the scriptures. The majority of the context is going to be talking about the home, okay? What goes on in the home? We see the term son 44 times, fathers 15, mother 11. We see how husbands and wives are told to unite joyfully together and to enjoy their marriage in a spiritual and physical sense. We also see the importance of remaining monogamous in that marriage. Kind of a funny thing to come from Solomon, huh? I guess he had 1,000 mistakes to write about and as in regards to how that works out. It even talks about how both parents are necessary in the training and nurturing of children. We have this idea in America that's now it's starting to go away, okay? But we have this traditional idea in American Christian churches that daddy goes to work and earns the money and mom raises all the kids and that's how that relationship works. Uh-uh. That's not how that works. You as the man, as the father, as the leader of your home, you are even more responsible for the upbringing of your children than your wife because you are the spiritual leader. You are both the nonverbal and verbal example to your children of what it means to be a follower of God, not your wife. Your wife's job is to teach them skills and to manage the home and to do whatever is necessary. If that means she has to work outside the home, okay? But even then, that idea of manage the home is not that she is your personal slave. That means that she helps to orchestrate getting the things done that need to be done. Whether that means you're helping, kids are helping, everybody's helping, doesn't matter. Her job is to help make sure those things run smoothly while you earn a living and help with raising the kids. It is a team sport, being a family. There is no MVP or somebody who does more than the other. It is a team sport, raising a family. And so it's kind of funny to me that that idea even exists, because in Proverbs it's clearly shown that is not the case. But we'll see that. We're going to talk about sins that will attack the order of the home. Today, the American family, it doesn't exist anymore. Okay, there is no family unit anymore. There's, single mothers, there's divorced homes, broken homes, stepfathers raising somebody else's children, stepmothers raising somebody else's children, situations where we have yours, mine, and ours. Guys, the family unit is almost gone in this world, and it's because the sins that attack the order of the home have been given sway in this world. Nobody taught their children about the dangers of what can destroy their families and their homes, and these are brought to light as well. We're also going to see in these books where wisdom and folly are compared and contrasted, okay, where you see how the wisdom will bring about a richness of life, whereas folly will bring about destruction in life, okay? We even see in chapter 8 where wisdom is personified and is given this idea of perfection. We are shown how it's divine, how it's the source of biological and spiritual life, how it's righteous and moral, how it's available to any who will ask for it. It's a very beautiful chapter in regards to why it's so important that we pay attention, okay? So in the book of Proverbs, to kind of just give you an outline, okay, we're going to have this discussion of the origin of wisdom, okay, and that's in God, it's from everlasting, it's before all things, okay? Then we're going to have this discussion of the teaching of wisdom. What kind of words can we pin down to show what wisdom is? And some of those are prudence, understanding, seeking after excellent things, truth, how you should have a hatred of wickedness or evil, righteousness, knowledge, discretion, and a fear of God. These are the things that are applicable to having wisdom. And we're going to talk about the value of wisdom, how it yields riches and honor. It's greater than gold or silver. That the wise are blessed, that the wise find life, that the foolish love death. Okay, we're going to see a lot of the values of wisdom. But looking at the actual overview of these books, chapters 1, verse 1, through verse 8 is going to give you the purpose and the theme. It's the prologue. It's the commendation of wisdom. It was written in Judah, time frame 950 to 450 BC, depending on if you want to go with Solomon wrote it and compiled it, or Solomon wrote it and Hezekiah compiled it. Doesn't matter either way. But we have that. Then chapters 1, verse 8, through chapter 10, is going to be a father's exhortations, okay? This is going to be applying the principles of wisdom and the counsel of wisdom. Chapter 10 through 25 is the first collection of Solomon's Proverbs. 25 through 30 is the second one. And then 30 through 31 is the numerical Proverbs, okay? This is the epilogue, all right? This is kind of the wrapping it all up, bringing it full circle. And then chapters 31 through the end of the book, it talks about a virtuous wife, okay? What a virtuous wife looks like. And this is where all of your comparisons of wisdom are going to occur, okay? So that's kind of Proverbs in a nutshell. It deals with these quick, witty, simple approaches to how life happens, okay? It's like if you do this, this will happen. Now, understand, because there's a lot of people that go to Proverbs, and they, you know, I hear this a lot with parents who have raised their kids in church. They've done right by their kids, but yet their kids end up out in left field somewhere, and they go, well, Proverbs says that if you raise a kid up in the Word, they'll return back to it. Guys, you need to understand that Proverbs is not a, this is a guaranteed roadmap. It is a, this will increase your chances roadmap, okay? Meaning that, yes, if you raise your kid in church, you raise your kid the right way, you give the right example, there's a very good chance that they will end up doing the right thing, right? They'll be a good, solid Christian, they'll raise a good, solid family, et cetera, but that is not a hard truth. Because everyone has a free will and everyone has the ability to choose whether or not they will do right. So you need to understand that the book of Proverbs is very important, gives very important lessons. It in every way, shape, and form will enhance your life. It'll make your life and your walk with God better. It will help you to do the very best you can so that when you die and go to heaven, it can be said that you did do your job to the best of your ability. However, it's not always a guaranteed rule of thumb XYZ will happen if you do this. Because humans, as we see in Ecclesiastes, have the free will, and also that there's many things about life that we cannot explain. You know, you see in Proverbs this idea that every single thing is important, every single thing matters, what you do and how you do it, all of this matters, and that's true, but we also need to bring into this theoretical on-paper outlook of life the reality of life, which is this idea that Solomon introduces about all is vanity. Okay, if you look at the book of Proverbs and you look at Ecclesiastes, it's like night and day. It's like a bipolar person sat down and wrote one book and then he got mad halfway through and started another book. Okay, but what you need to understand is that we as God's people need to hope for the best, look to do the best, you know, follow everything that we can, have a positive outlook on life, but at the same time, we need to be realistic about what can occur in life, okay? God wants you to enjoy your life here. He wants you to have the best that you can have here. Not meaning that he's going to give you a Mercedes or anything like that, but that rather you will have a happy, humble life with needs met, okay? He wants you to enjoy your life here. He wants you to work and do and accomplish things with the purpose of bringing honor and glory to him. However, at the end of the day, there's many things that you and I do that don't really have an effect on eternity, okay? And what I mean by that is that the work of God is eternal, right? Preaching, teaching, witnessing to people, those things will last and they will abound into more and more everlasting blessings long after you and I are gone. Okay. Whereas my chickens that I absolutely love and adore, at the end of the day, one day I will die, they will all be gone, and everything that I have ever done with them will be gone as well. That's the aspect of life that helps you to understand what's important and what is vanity. Okay. And so we need to be positive. We need to have this good outlook on life. We need to apply these rules and understand that these rules and ideas most of the time will be beneficial, or at least will give us the best odds for having a beneficial life. But at the same time, we need to be realistic. I tell my church members all the time, I hope for the best and I expect the worst. That's kind of the idea of Proverbs and Ecclesiastes. And so Ecclesiastes is going to be a Debbie Downer book, okay? I'm just going to be honest with you. But it's important because there are two extremes in God's churches today. There are what I call proverb churches, which almost borderline on health and wealth, prosperity, gospel type churches where everything's dandy and great and we're, you know, life's a box of chocolates. And then you have that extreme where everybody is the world is awful, the world's terrible, nothing will ever get better, there's no point in even bothering with witnessing because nobody will ever change. And so we have these extremes in these churches, whereas we don't have a lot of people anymore that are right on the middle line where, yes, you need to hope for the best and work for the best, but don't be surprised if life kicks you in the pants seat, okay? So what we're looking at with Ecclesiastes, when we talk about the name, it's derived from ecclesia, okay, which is assembly, right? I don't know any Christian that doesn't know that one Greek word, ekklesia, okay? That's been a real heavy hitter word for the last 50, 60 years, okay? When pastors started to actually learn Hebrew and Greek and were like, oh, ekklesia, 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 okay? But Ecclesiastes actually carries the idea of one who addresses an assembly, or you would call them a preacher, okay, and or a teacher in English. Now, when we look at this, I want you to understand something, okay, because it means preacher. We have this idea today that preachers are supposed to get up, yell, holler, beat on a few things, talk about salvation and move on with life, or we get to have this idea that every Sunday they're supposed to get up and encourage you and this and that and make you feel good and send you on your way, okay? Friends, the jobs of preachers is to teach the message and then preach the application, okay? Preaching is both teaching and preaching at the same time. Notice that they have like two letters different in them, okay? My job is to teach the saved people what this means to their life, okay? What this is about. What these verses are talking about. What we're doing right now is the teaching portion of what would be my sermon, okay? But then we get to what is the application. That's where the preaching starts, okay? There's a very, very, very fine line between teaching and preaching, okay? So what Solomon is going to be doing is essentially teaching his message. Okay, why life is vanity. He's going to show you all these things, why this is vanity, 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 vanity. But then, by the end of the book, he's going to preach the application of all of this Debbie Downerness and what it means when he says all is vanity, which is that the point of life is that you should fear God and keep his commandments. That's the preaching part, okay? So, it's very, very, very well addressed that he is referred to as the preacher throughout Ecclesiastes, okay? The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem, okay, is what you're going to see a lot in the book itself, okay? Now, to talk about the themes and structure, Ecclesiastes is no... how can I say this? There's no light book to read, okay? If you're one of those people that reads the Bible in a year, just skip Ecclesiastes and spend the next year reading it, okay? It's a very complex book. It brings a lot of collections of different types of literature that are going to be making the same point to the table, but it brings this different light each time to why all things are vanity, okay? A third of the book is poetry, which in itself is difficult. Another part of it is Proverbs. Another section of it is more reflective and meditative. It's a very, very difficult book to even sit down and break into an outline, okay? Because it's in such a... It's just not like any other book in the Bible. And I'm borrowing this guy's outline because if I outlined it, we'd have like 60 segments. He outlined it into kind of a three-part, he calls it schema, okay? That's an interesting word, isn't it? Schema, 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 I don't know, whatever. And he breaks it down into three parts. You have the thesis that all is vanity, okay? You need to understand that what Solomon is going to prove to you is that everything in life outside of the work of God is vanity because even now in this day and time, we're still doing the same stuff we've been doing for thousands of years and just in a different way, right? Let me give you a perfect example. The cell phone, okay? Cell phone's been around for, if you want to go all the way back to the bag phone, probably around 75 to 100 years, okay? But reality, the cell phone that you and I know to be true, it came out probably about 25 to 30 years ago is when they started to appear, all right? Now, we think of the cell phone as this amazing, ingenious thing, right? It's this small little computer in our pocket. But let's break down to brass tacks what a cell phone is. It's used for communication, right? Okay, has there ever been a time in history that humans have not been able to communicate with each other because we didn't have a cell phone? No, we had letters, messengers. We can do it faster. We can do it more specifically. We can talk to people all around the world in a blink of an eye, but we're still communicating with people, aren't we? Huh. Well, when you think about that, it's still the same old game, just has a new face. And so that's Solomon's point, is that no matter how far man progresses, no matter how far we gain from a materialistic standpoint or accomplish or figure out, at the end of the day, it's the same old thing with a new face. Okay? And so he's going to give this thesis that all is vanity. He's going to tell you, everything is vanity, vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, okay? Then we're going to break down the fact that there's proof to his thesis, the proof that all is vanity, which I just gave you some, didn't I? You might be sitting there going, well, I mean, it's still better than back then. Yes, but at the end of the day, it's still just talking to people. Kind of like chairs. They used to sit on the floor on a rug for the Hebrews. Now I'm sitting in an office chair, okay? It's a different chair, but what am I still doing? I'm sitting, right? It's still the same old thing. That's just a new, different way of doing it, okay? That we see that all the time. In fact, I kind of got to laughing with my wife the other night because we were looking at some new toy. It was a commercial for some new toy that came out. That I told her, I said, does that not look like the 90s Lisa Frank nonsense that you girls used to get all the time at that awful, terrible rainbow colors and purple leopards and nonsense that we were all like, I feel like these girls are on acid trips, okay, kind of thing. And she said, you know, you're right. And it was some new toy they created. But look at that, okay? Supposed to be a new toy, but what does it have the semblance of? The past. It's the same old thing, new face, new wrapper. Okay, so the proof that all is vanity. And then the last part is the counsel for living with vanity. Okay, now understand this. When I say the counsel for living with vanity, I mean helping to balance the important things over the not so important things. Okay, God's word, God's kingdom, that's important. That should be your number one priority every day as a child of God. But you're also still supposed to do all things to the glory of God. So what Solomon's point is that all things are vanity. However, if you obey God, fear God, keep his commandments, do what you're supposed to do for him, then even though the things you are doing is in vain, it is going to actually matter because you're doing it to the glory of God. Anything you do out in your life outside of hoping to bring honor and glory to God by doing your very best is vanity. And that's his point. You can't fill anything, you can't fill the God hole with any amount of material things because it's all vanity unless you're doing it within the reins of trying to be a good follower of God. So now you understand the complexities, right? I'm kind of going back and forth here to get this idea around to you. And so the point of the thesis is all is vanity, and we're going to talk about all of those different reasons and how this book actually ends up very well supplementing the book of Proverbs. Now, to give you an outline, okay? The location of our book, all right, where our location takes place is under the sun. Okay, what's under the sun? The world, right? The location for all of the topics that we are going to be talking about is, in fact, the world itself, all right? So chapters 1, verse 1 through verse 4 is the introduction of the thesis, the introduction of vanity, okay? Chapters 1, verse 4 through chapter 1, verse 12 is the illustrations of vanity. And we're going to be seeing the declaration of vanity, meaning Solomon is saying, look, I'm right. And that's the subject of the entire book, okay? Then chapters 1, verse 12 through chapter 3 is proof from the scriptures of how all things are vanity. And then chapters 3 through 7 is proof from observations, okay? And this is the fancy way is to say the demonstration of vanity, right? Alliteration. Pastors are weird about that. And this is, in fact, the sermons section, okay? Then chapter 7 through chapter 10 is coping in a wicked world. Chapters 10 through 12 is the counsel for uncertainty. And then chapters 12 through the end of the book is the conclusion, which is to fear and obey God. And that is how to turn from vanity. It's the summary of the book itself, okay? So Solomon introduces his point, proves his point, and then applies his point to you and how you are to deal with such an issue, okay? So, Proverbs and Ecclesiastes. Proverbs is the hope for the best, do your best, do the best that you possibly can, work for God, do what you can in this life to be a good follower of Him. But Ecclesiastes is the expect the worst part, meaning understand that because we live in a sinful world, because we are sinners, and because life sometimes is just absolutely tragic, sometimes life will just kick you in the hind end and knock you, push you down and kick you some more, okay? You need to understand that there are things in this life that do not matter in light of making sure to do the work of God. So it gives you a good balance of you do everything you can to your best. However, do not let these things, because they are vanity, overcome your relationship with God. We can't begin to put a higher importance on our work and our wealth and whatever than we can God. That's one of the biggest things that kind of gets in my craw. If you skip church, because, oh, well, I have a job thing and I need to go ahead and get it done now because I got some free time. Friend, you're putting vanity before God. Now, I understand there's some people that your work schedule, you're literally scheduled to be there and, you know, there's nothing you can do about that. But people that do have the ability to avoid or have the ability to go to church without anything stopping them, that put the vain things of this life before that, they are not prioritizing their life correctly. And that's what Ecclesiastes is doing. You can't, I'm trying to do my best for God, so I got to get out there and do that. No, it's not how that works. So, as you're going about the remainder of this week, take the time to look at Proverbs and Ecclesiastes, and I would say read the book of Proverbs every day. Go through a parable. Go through, you know, a wise saying. You know, there's some verses that's just this pithy saying and we move on, okay? Take the time to look at that, but understand we as God's people are to be joyful, to hope for the best, but we also need to have a fine understanding of reality and what is important in this life and what is not, okay? So, that's all I got for you today. I hope all of you enjoyed it and that you have a great remainder of your week. This has been Studies Through the Bible with Pastor Zach Ebar. Get out of here and go study.